The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Listening to Super Chat, the official school information podcast for Sunman Dearborn Community Schools. Thank you for joining us today. I am your host, Gary Puckett. And today my guest is your superintendent, Dr. Andrew Jackson. Our podcast comes to you on our nationwide media network. We operate with a team of 35 individual show hosts around the country. We also have 80 syndication partners and 17 different media domain platforms. We furnish on-demand media programming for over 3,300 small communities across the nation. We offer the Super Chat show format for school districts anywhere in the country. However, this edition is produced solely for the benefit of the stakeholders of Sunman Dearborn Community Schools. Andrew, welcome back to another Super Chat.
Thank you, Gary. It's always great to be with you.
I do enjoy our conversations. I feel like they're constructive and very informative for stakeholders, and that's a good thing. You know, I have learned over the years of doing this show format for many schools that one source of interest on the part of most superintendents has long been the General Assembly. I'll limit it to the Indiana schools, and we'll zero in on that. So, Andrew, for the benefit of our listeners, could you describe and explain the impact of any current education-related bills being considered or even bills recently passed in Indianapolis?
Absolutely. Before I get into two specific ones, just kind of an overview of the Indiana General Assembly. So over the last, I would say, 10 to 12 years, the Indiana General Assembly has become much more involved in passing laws that are very much policy-driven laws to implement in schools. It used to be that the State Board of Education would pass the rules in their what's called the Indiana Administrative Code, which basically the State Board would say, these are the things we want you to accomplish, this is how you're going to accomplish it. But lately, over the past decade, that a lot of that burden has shifted to the Indiana General Assembly, and so every year, our listeners may be surprised, but superintendents are on various listservs and groups that we hear information about multiple bills that are being considered that are directly related to K-12 education. And it's not just funding anymore like it used to be. It is other things as well, including curriculum, and it's even getting down to instruction and how we teach in the classroom. So I think maybe some of our listeners would be surprised by that. As a superintendent, I actually sit on a few different groups. I'm on the policy and legislative committee with our superintendents association. So we draft talking points and priorities that we share with our senators and House representatives, our locals, which is currently Randy Linus in the House, and then both Randy Maxwell and Jeff Rotz in the Senate. And then I'm also on a group that is specifically meets two times a week to talk about legislation. And we actually have in that group legislators that join us as well, because they do ask for our input, and we're happy to have a seat at the table to help them. You know, we need to find out what exactly they're trying to get accomplished. And they ask us now, how would this work and what would it look like? And so we do appreciate that they are asking us about that. One of those bills I like the listeners to know about is Senate Bill 1. For those that aren't familiar with the Indiana General Assembly, they number their bills, and anything at the Senate side, so half the bills start in the Senate, half of them start in the House. They do their hearings, they pass them, and then they flip sides, and they modify them, adjust them, add amendments. And then if the two bills aren't the same, they get passed, they go to a conference committee, and they agree on the differences, and then it goes to the governor to sign to become law. So for on the Senate side, there's two I want to talk about, but the numbering is significant too. So anything that is Senate Bill 1 through 10 is considered a priority by the caucus. And the caucus is the group from each party. So right now, the GOP has a majority in both the the Republicans in both the Senate and the House. So their caucus is determining the majority of the seats on the committees and what gets heard and what doesn't get heard. So when you see something called Senate Bill 1, you know it's important. And so the Senate caucus, the GOP, is saying that's the most important bill this session. And it's all about reading. So they have concerns that our third grade reading scores have dropped since COVID. And they've not rebounded, and that we have students that are being promoted to fourth grade that cannot read at a third grade reading level. And we are able to promote students to fourth grade, but they have to receive third grade reading instruction in fourth grade if they did not pass iRead, but we do have what's called a good cause exemption. And so the state legislator is concerned that we have too many students across the state that aren't passing iRead 3 and are being promoted to fourth grade on a good cause exemption. So Senate Bill 1 has multiple strategies they want us to employ, and many of them here we're already employing. One would be required to use science of reading as the instructional model for reading, which we're already doing. In fact, we have a grant and we have an instructional coach at each of the three elementaries implementing science of reading. It will require all second graders to take the iRead test so that we know at the end of second grade who's not on track to pass the iRead in third grade. We already do that, so that's not a change. And there's other things as well regarding that, but the final one, which is going to be a change, is that if you try all these things and it doesn't work, then two things are going to happen. The student has to continue to take iRead 3 through the end of seventh grade every year until they pass it, and you have to retain the student unless they are an English language learner or a special ed student. You must retain that student in third grade. Now, just so our listeners remember that this is just what's been written and introduced. They're having hearings. It'll likely change some. Whether or not that piece of it remains is yet to be seen. We've expressed some concern that we are required to retain and taken away that local control to make that decision, because there's a lot of factors in making the decision to retain a child. But I think our listeners should know that that's out there, and it's very possible that it's going to remain in that bill. We'll know more in the next couple months as that moves through the Senate and then moves to the House, and then finally gets to the governor for his consideration. So across, as a state, you know, the goal was 95%. We are at 92%, the most recent. So we do well. You know, that's a pretty good percentage. We need to improve it. The state average is about 82%. So there's a lot of schools out there that are really going to have a lot more issues than we are, because for us, it's just a few students who are not ELL or not special ed, didn't pass iRead. So we're literally looking at three or four students at some in Dearborn, where there's some other large school districts that have passing rates as low as 70% that are looking at hundreds of students. But it's still across the state. It still will affect us, but certainly not as large of an effect as some other schools.
You know, with the science of reading, which you indicated that your teachers are already really implementing, utilizing, and more or less following, there are a lot of fundamentals to this. However, my question to you is, how much of a part is phonetics to the science of reading in helping these third graders, second graders, and even prior to that, learn and adopt reading skills?
That's a great question. So a couple of months ago, we actually did an entire special on our entire episode on the science of reading, since we were implementing it. But it is very much a phonics-based, back-to-basics, traditional way of teaching reading. And there's kind of five areas that we focus on. Three of them are fluency. That just means the speed at which you read, vocabulary and comprehension, understanding what you read. But two out of the five are specific to phonics. One is phonemic awareness, which is being able to distinguish individual sounds in a word. And the other one is phonics, which is kind of the rules of reading, right? So it's very strong about phonemic awareness and phonics. In fact, those are the first two of the five pillars. So it's very much a traditional phonics-based approach. Many of our listeners who are my age in their mid-50s or older will remember how they were taught reading. For whatever reason, we moved away from that. As a K-12, we moved away from teaching more of a traditional phonics-based reading. So this is really getting back to those research-based fundamentals that we know work.
Well, you know, the interesting thing to me is, you know this, your teachers know this, and I think about it mainly because I speak with so many schools everywhere that it just rubs off, okay? But once you get beyond third grade, if your reading skills are not up to par, life is going to be difficult and frustrating for that student because you're in effect weakened or you have an inability to learn from reading, whereas up until third grade, you're learning to read, as they say. So you accept that as a basic truth too, right?
Oh, absolutely. And we've talked about that. And that's why the Indiana General Assembly chose third grade as the reading test that we take, because that's kind of the point in whether it determines if you're going to be successful or not moving through the end of your 12th grade.
Mm-hmm. So if a parent out there listening has a young child, you know, preschool, kindergarten, whatever, if they wanted to help their child along the path of learning and acquiring reading skills, what can they themselves do at home to help their child progress and prepare them in this way?
The easiest thing that parents can do and what we should all be doing is reading to their child with them on their lap, following along in the book. So have the book open. Have your finger where the words are and following along and allow them to listen, maybe read part of it with you, take turns, et cetera. But just to read with their child at home, you can ask questions about what they just read, make it topics of interest, anything they want to read. If that's what they want to read, then sit down and read it with them. You know, many of our parents start with newborns, right? And you're reading and they hear your voice, and as they get older, they're starting to pick up on some of those words. That's the best thing parents can do is read with their child.
Hmm. I wanted to move on to another bill, a bill that deals with habitual truancy. And I'm sure this is a big problem within many schools, but how much of a problem is truancy within some in Dearborn schools compared to many of the other schools and the superintendents you speak with from around the state?
Yes. Yeah, so similar to Senate Bill 1 and Science of Reading, Senate Bill 282 deals with truancy, and it doesn't affect us like it does some of those other large urban schools. So the concern from the Indiana General Assembly is attendance has not rebounded. You know, during COVID, we encouraged people to stay home if they're sick. And we actually required some to stay home, you know, even with the close contacts and all that. And so what we found is that students are not returning to school and coming as often as they need to. So there's a term the state uses called habitual truancy, and that's anyone that has been absent more than 10 days of school year unexcused. So we don't have a lot of that. Like I said, you look at IPS or Fort Wayne or some of the other large urbans, they have a much higher percent than what we have at some in Dearborn. And so what happens is when you have the large districts with a large amount of the data, it skews the state averages, right? So if you looked at the percent of districts that are having issues of habitual truancy, it's not very many, but the few that are such a large district that they can easily add up to, you know, 40, 50% of the students real quick. So that's what we're seeing, but it just still does affect us because it's now going to be a likely passed. And so there's some things that the listeners should be aware of that eventually, you know, they are going to require that we submit information to the truancy court immediately after 10 days. We're going to have to change our handbooks a little bit to comply with the state, but it's even to the point where part of the legislation is that they shall put a civil penalty on the parents whose child is truant. So that is literally levying a fine in the courts for parents. That's in the current code, that the bill that's out there. And if that makes it through both sides of the both the Senate and the House, and it remains and it's signed, that will be in the law starting next year, that if your child is habitually truant and you're not getting them to school, that you will be levied a fine by the court system. And I think that's significant. And I've spoken to senators about this, and they are pretty adamant that there is some sort of financial penalty for this to make parents bring their students to school. Now, again, this is unexcused, and they don't define what excused and unexcused is. We define that locally, and we currently, you know, we have medical notes, and we also have parent notes. We know that sometimes kids are sick, and they don't go to the doctor, but I do think some of those things are going to change. It's pretty easy to get to a doctor anymore, particularly with all the virtual options are out there, so I think the parents should expect some changes in our handbook once the law is signed, and we know what it, how it ends up, you know, and what we need to do. We will likely have to adjust ours to comply with it. But again, it's a significant concern at the state level. It's Senate Bill 282, so it's not considered a priority bill. But I'm certain that something will pass that will require us to address habitual truancy, and it's likely to include a civil penalty in there as well.
Yeah. Well, in truancy cases, currently, I believe that a contact or a referral has to be made to the Department of Children's Services to have them get involved, at least initially. And, you know, if DCS efforts are unsuccessful, how often does the typical school district file an affidavit in their local court system against the parents? Does this happen very often across the board with the schools you know of and speak with, and including some in Dearborn?
We submit it to truancy down at Dearborn County, and then they deal with it from there. So it's there. They determine whether or not it's going to be some sort of educational neglect, which it can get to. But we don't really make that decision. We submit the paperwork to them saying this student has missed so many days, and they handle it accordingly. We have seen some parents been found educationally neglect by a judge. It doesn't happen very often. Usually it's handled through the truancy officers that take care of that. But sometimes it does get to that point. You know, again, we don't have a lot of that, but we do have enough that our listeners should be aware of it. And it's one of those soft skills, Gary, that employers want to see when students graduate. They'll show up. So kids get into a habit, particularly once you start getting into high school, that, you know, I wake up, I don't feel so good, or I'm tired. And, you know, sometimes you need to go to school or go to work when you don't feel great. You know, I'm not sick. I don't have a fever, but I got a little bit of a runny nose. Well, you need to be at work. They expect you to be there because that's where that habit develops. And it is really difficult for students that did not have good attendance in school to convert that immediately to good attendance in a job. So that's why, one, is the instruction, which is important, but it's also that employment skill that we are trying to teach, that attendance is important. They want you there. They need you there. So we're trying to develop that skill as well.
Yeah. So just to be clear then, really, in the case where it's warranted, some in Dearborn schools will make a referral to the Department of Children's Services. And from there, anything beyond that that takes place is really communication and work between DCS and the court system. You're out of the picture at that point.
Correct.
Okay. Well, Andrew, this has been a good discussion, quite informative for our listeners, I do believe. And I want to thank you for joining me once again here on Super Chat.
Thank you, Gary.
So I have been your host, Gary Puckett, and we are happy that you have opted in to listen today and plan to join us here monthly, year-round. So until our next show, this has been Super Chat, the official school information podcast for Sunman-Dearborn Community Schools.